Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Power Ranking Show is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all of your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for football, basketball, baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and the easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games that are available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
And that, of course, is the voice of at Marcus underscore Mosher. This is the Power Rankings podcast, aka the Power Ranking Show. And I got to tell you, we've had a long season, and Marcus has been intermittent on the podcast lately. Power's been out. Serious football to watch. Marcus was on the edge of his seat about Commanders. Cowboys really stressing over that one. Maybe not. But we think that the NFL hasn't been challenged enough. No, you know, I got to say, I'm laughing because you look at the teams and you were going over our power rankings from the past, and you think about some of the stuff that we thought at the beginning of the year. And when you said that we had the Jets at number two,
well,
that stuck
fair,
to the ribs.
To the ribs.
Yeah.
You had the Jets at number two, not me. Yeah. I'm the fault of all this.
We thought the Chargers were going to be good again, and we were woefully wrong on that. And what else did we just get terribly wrong?
We thought that the Texans would win the AFC South. Oh, wait. No, we did.
Oh, here we go. Here comes the bragging. Here it comes.
Hey, listen. I just want to say, I think we got all eight division winners right. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Texans, Chiefs, Ravens. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I think I did pick the Ravens. That's the one I don't remember. We didn't get the AFC East. Didn't we think it was the Jets?
Well, you thought it was the Jets. Oh, me, as a diehard Buffalo Bills fan over here, thought it was always going to be my Bills.
Yeah, Niners, Lions, Bucks. Who did we say in the South?
I think you and I went back and forth a little bit on Saints Bucks, but that ended up being just based off tiebreakers, right?
Yeah, right. Man, oh man. Well, I'll tell you what, I think the biggest surprise in the NFL to me this year that we got it right at one point, but the Texans, I mean, to improve your win total by eight, I'm talking about preseason expectations to where they are. Now, obviously, there were some teams that were really surprising about how they overcame certain things. Yeah. I think Cleveland would fall very much into that category. I don't think if someone would have said to you at the beginning of the year, hey, Cleveland's going to go 11-6 versus Houston going 9-8, I think you would have thought Cleveland would go 11-6.
Yeah, right.
We didn't know they were going to lose their star running back, their quarterback, and so on and so forth, and end up with Joe Flacco leading into the playoffs and not even having anything to win, play for in the last week of the season. But Houston, I think season long from preseason now, is still the biggest surprise. Both their draft picks panned out, both their first round picks. Yeah. That's not counting the other guys. They had like four rookies this year that really played huge roles. The guy that you love so much, Tank Dell, maybe wasn't on the way to being rookie of the year, but he was on the way to being all rookie. That's for sure. He might still make all rookie, actually, even missing the time that he did. Any team that I'm missing that could compete with the Texans for that?
I would mention the Rams. I know it's a little bit easy in hindsight. Yeah, it's the Rams. It's Matt Stafford, Sean McVay. Of course, we thought they were going to be. No, a lot of people just thought they were going to be really bad, and they were going to be in the Caleb Williams sweepstakes. And even, you know, people early in the year when they were struggling to get some of these wins, I think they were, 3-5 at one point?
Yeah.
3-6.
3-6, I think.
Yeah. And now they're one of the bigger sleepers in the NFC. I think that's a huge surprise. I also think another one of the biggest surprises, just how good this goatee is that you have. I didn't know you could grow a goatee that fast.
It's really a beard, but it's just like the Florida Everglades on the side. It's a little patchy. I had a baseball hat on. Now you get the matted hair look. You know, if you talk about in-season surprises, obviously the Browns are one, but I think two other teams that warrant mention are Green Bay and the Colts. Yes.
Oh gosh.
The Packers, people were not big on Jordan Love after 5 or 6 weeks of the season. I've told you this before. I thought the first half of the season, Kirk Cousins was the best quarterback in the league. I joked about it with you early on. And then I was like, shoot, Kirk Cousins might really be the MVP after he beat the 49ers on Monday Night Football. The Vikings beat the 49ers, but he was great.
Yeah.
Second half of the season, maybe the best quarterback in the league was Jordan Love. If you put Green Bay to the side, how about Indy losing Anthony Richardson right off the bat, playing Gardner Minshew, getting hosed against Cleveland, coming a drop short of maybe winning the AFC South? I think they have a lot to be proud of. And they also played a lot of games without Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, they were really good. I'm really excited about their future. I think if you are a Colts fan, I know that last game didn't go the way that you were hoping, but I think it feels like you at least have the right coach in place.
Yeah, rookie head coach. We should mention that too. You know, so you know, the Texans, the Colts, the Packers, the Browns. You mentioned the Rams. Real quick, big disappointments. Go ahead.
Jacksonville was 8-3 at one point in the season, and we were talking about like, hey, could this team go 12-5 and be the one seed in the AFC? They won one game after they were 8-3, and that was against the Panthers at home. I mean, just completely laid an egg to go 9-8 and to miss the playoffs with Trevor Lawrence on his rookie contract. That's I don't know how it could be any more frustrating than that.
I think preseason, I mean, I think it's easy to pick on the Chargers here. Preseason until now, though, and we could pick on the Patriots too, I think, but especially
we kind of knew they were going to struggle though.
Right. And if I'm keeping injuries out, like Cousins' injury, Aaron Rodgers' injury, preseason until now, I really think the Giants were a huge disappointment. They got it back together at the end of the year, but there were people still thinking the Giants, maybe they wouldn't win the division or anything, but that they would be competitive this year and in the running for a wild card berth again. And they really failed to build off of the momentum they had last year where they made the playoffs. They went into Minnesota, had a great game plan, really took it to the Vikings. Granted, they got demolished by Philadelphia, but I thought the Giants were one of the bigger disappointments, and it started week one.
I mean, the first couple weeks of the season, the game against Dallas, and they played San Fran, was it the following week, and just got walloped in that one. Yeah, those are the worst seasons where you just start off so slow and you never get it back, and there's never any hope for excitement at all. Daniel Jones towards ACL a couple weeks into the season. Rough year for the New York teams.
I wanted to check in. We're doing a little bit longer podcast tonight. We've got all the teams to go through, and we just wanted to talk about a couple season-wide things. I wanted to circle back to you with the MVP race. You and I talked about it. I think right now you and I are pretty much in lockstep. Probably Lamar, Christian McCaffrey, 1-2. What's 3-4-5 looking for you like right now?
I think Dak does deserve to be like the third or the fourth guy because he led the NFL in passing touchdowns. He led the Cowboys to an NFC East title, which again, before the year, nobody was picking Dallas to win the NFC East. Everybody just assumed it was Philly. The Cowboys are the number two seed. The Cowboys are the highest scoring offense in the league. Not saying that he should win it, but I do think he should get some recognition.
You think he should be over Tyreek?
I think it's him and Tyreek in some order, 3 and 4.
So I would put Tyreek at 3. My question with Dak, because I'd probably have Dak around 5, but has Dak been more valuable than CeeDee Lamb for the Cowboys?
So this is the thing that you and I always talk about. If it's If we're talking about the award being the most outstanding player, I think this is where Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, and CeeDee Lamb all get really good arguments. But when we're talking about value and most valuable player, I think you have to put Dak ahead of those guys.
Man, I just don't know with the way Gallup, and I loved Michael Gallup, but with the way he's played, I just don't know if the Cowboys didn't have CeeDee Lamb, if they could move. Because the fact that you can move him around like the queen on the chessboard really makes him a different guy. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that says something about the quarterback, too. I think that CeeDee's been the most valuable Cowboy this year, even over Micah, too. And we should mention Micah Parsons while we're having this discussion. If we had Lamar, CMC, Tyreek, Dak, would a defensive player enter that top five either at five, or would you consider putting a defensive player over Tyreek and Dak?
No, I don't think you can put a defensive player over those guys because it's really even hard to decide who's the defensive player of the year. You and I talked about before the show, Myles Garrett's case, Michael Parsons' case, Deron Bland. For heaven's sakes, had five defensive touchdowns, and he's not even mm-hmm. in the conversation. Mm-hmm. T.J. Watt led the NFL in sacks again. Max Crosby had that Raiders defense playing outside of their mind. So, no, I think you keep CeeDee Lamb, Dak, Tyreek, McCaffrey, and then Lamar up top.
Fred Warner is extremely valuable to that 49ers organization, period. I've got one more name to throw out here. I've thrown this name out to you before. There's one name I would consider putting at three over Tyreek and over Dak. So I might have it Lamar, CMC, this guy, Tyreek, and either Dak or CD. And that's CJ Stroud. You know, I think it's really easy to just sit there and say, oh, yeah, but he'll be rookie of the year. Well, that doesn't mean that you can't also, it's kind of like in baseball, a Cy Young Award winner has also won the MVP. I think you can be rookie of the year and also be the MVP of the league. And with CJ Stroud, it's too easy to just brush him off. The Texans increased by 8 wins. And I'll ask you this. I asked you this on the phone, but I'd like to ask you this here. Don't you think sometimes it's a little strange that we look at wins for quarterbacks, except when it comes to a turnaround? When it's a turnaround, the win all of a sudden morphs into a head coach stat and not a rookie star stat, right? Or a new free agent acquisition stat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think even more so than the wins for the Texans and CJ Stroud, he's made that team fun again.
Yeah.
And relevant. I mean, my gosh, Elliot, over the last 3 years, how boring and unexciting have the Texans been? The most exciting moment for the Texans over the last 3 years was in week 18 last year when Lovie Smith, who we knew was going to get fired, ended up getting a win so they didn't get the number one pick. That was the most exciting thing. And if you ask Texans fans, probably the least exciting thing because they were rooting against their own team to win that game, to make this team not only a playoff team, but suddenly like a team everybody wants to see, like in prime time, it's a big deal.
So you were talking about most valuable versus most outstanding in terms of CD versus Dak. If we look at most valuable, and I'm a voter and I don't vote, I've never voted, by the way, guys, for MVP of the league. But if I'm looking at it and you tell me, no, you have to vote on who's most valuable, then I'm going to look at it as who's most valuable. And that includes putting butts in the seats and making the team relevant and giving the team juice. What player did that more than CJ Stroud did? Nobody did. The stats are pretty good.
I will disagree with you with one player. And this is a guy we haven't mentioned. Josh Allen, for what he's done with Buffalo. And I know the turnovers have been there, but when you score 46 touchdowns on a team that, I mean, frankly, I just don't think is all that talented out of
Josh
Allen.
Top of the list.
Yeah.
He should be at the top of the list. Yeah, I know. I agree. That's tough. By the way, guys, CJ Stroud, 23 passing touchdowns, 5 interceptions. The stat that most impresses me, though, is not the win turnaround. It's not the TD to INT ratio. He's got a great passer rating. It's over 100. It's that he led the league as a rookie in lowest interception percentage. If he was a dink and dunker, 2 yard out to Jerick McKinnon kind of guy, that'd be one thing. But he's always looking to make throws down the field. The fact that he led the NFL, I can't even think of it. I wonder who the last rookie to lead the NFL in lowest interception percentage is. It's pretty remarkable because that means he's not making the negative plays to hurt your young team.
I wonder if RG3 did it his rookie year, because he had, what, 20 touchdowns and 5 interceptions?
Right, but I don't think his pass attempts were that high. That's the one thing about interception percentage is you have to have a lot of passer attempts, which CJ Stroud did. Anyway, interesting way to look at the MVP. I mean, maybe Josh Allen belongs there more than Dak, CD, or Tyreek. That's a tough one. The thing is that Dak didn't make the negative plays that Josh Allen did. By the way, I'm defending Dak Prescott here. I just want you to recognize this. And then, I mean, gosh, what?
I wish I had an alarm button just to push. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think the only negative play CeeDee Lamb made all year was fumbling the ball through the end zone. Of course, it's hard for a receiver to do that. Anyway, interesting thoughts there. Last thing before we get to the rankings, I want to talk about the moves the last couple of days. What did you really see coming? What startled you a little bit?
I mean, I think the most surprising one was the Mike Vrabel decision because, listen, you and I have talked numerous times in this podcast about how much we like Mike Vrabel and how much we respect him. And I think you and I will always remember that Sunday night football game against the Chiefs where the Titans got one first down after the first quarter in Kansas City against the Chiefs that would go on to win the Super Bowl. And they took that game late into overtime. It's just a marvelous job by Mike Vrabel. But
Malik Willis's first start, I think.
Yeah. Oh, jeez, what a rough start. But I gotta say, I'm not surprised by it because the Titans over the last 6 years, in three of those seasons, they finished 27th or worse in scoring offense. And it's just it's an offensive league. Like, you've got to put up numbers on that side of the ball in order to keep your job. I know the personnel has not been great. The quarterback situation has not been great, but I think Mike Vrabel has a different philosophy on how to win games. And I think the new front office there has a little bit different of a philosophy. And I think that's why they made the change.
Is the Ron Rivera exit the least surprising kind of footnote to the season for you?
I mean, what about Brandon Staley?
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you one that I was a little surprised at is Bill Belichick. I'm surprised he wanted to come back with less control. I thought he might.
We still haven't had a decision. We don't have a decision yet. It's just that's what he's open to now.
Still seems odd to me. I'll tell you one that I'm not surprised at. The Jets running it back with the same group. You kind of got that feel this year, and it just felt like the Jets were kind of, I don't want to say playing with house money, because they'd have zero reason to be playing with house money. Playing with house money means you had to win. That's what playing with house money means. You, like, won at blackjack. But it just felt like the moment Aaron Rodgers went down, everything got excused. And I think a lot of us out there that watch the Jets this year blame some of the failures on the front office not getting a more viable backup quarterback. I know they went with Zach Wilson, but then with Tim Boyle, they were really, really not good.
They got worse with Simeon. The thing is, you saw, Elliot, other teams in the NFL have quarterback injuries and go out and make moves and have success. I mean,
stay afloat.
What Cleveland did with Dorian Thompson-Robinson, PJ Walker, and now Joe Flacco is incredible. We saw Minnesota at least be somewhat competent with Josh Dobbs and Nick Mullins.
Cincinnati
with Jake Browning, and the Jets, who had the quarterback injury the earliest of all these teams, so they had more options than anybody, just decided, you know what, we're good. Let's just pack it in and wait for next year.
Did you mention the Colts?
Oh, I didn't mention the Colts. Oh, that's another good one. Because
that, to me, is maybe the premier example, because with the Browns, Deshaun Watson played part of the year. The Colts lost Anthony Richardson so early, and they planned the whole year around developing this guy. I don't think anybody was thinking Gardner Minshew is going to come in and have him right there. And I realize Minshew wasn't fantastic, but for a backup, who's a better backup quarterback than Gardner Minshew? I mean, there might be two, maybe.
Can you even think of one?
I like Keenum a lot. I mean, if I needed to win a game and I need a guy to manage that game, I like Keenum.
The thing with I agree with you. If I need one game, but I think over the course of the season, I do like Minshew better.
Sure, I'm with you there. That's a good question. Now that I think about it, you know, I tell you, somebody that's acquitted himself pretty well in a backup role, and he did it again this year at times, was Tyrod Taylor. Remember, he got hurt, then he came back. But either way, I'm sure there's somebody that we're forgetting right now. We're probably getting really off track, but you just can't.
Mitch Trubisky?
We have to mention Joe Flacco. Yeah, we have to mention, is that comeback player of the year? Who's comeback player of the year?
I mean, it's probably DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah.
We need two different awards. Let me just say that.
Yeah. I tell you what, this isn't our picks podcast, but man, how sweet would it be if Cleveland beats Houston, the other wild card teams lose, and Cleveland goes to Baltimore in the divisional round? I would much rather see that than Pittsburgh upset Buffalo. I'd rather see Cleveland play in Baltimore than Buffalo play in Baltimore. I could tell you that right now. I know Buffalo's the two, and that would have to happen in the AFC Championship game. But
don't give you, yeah.
I think Cleveland would have a better chance to beat them than Buffalo.
Oh, without a doubt. For sure. I mean, they're just a better team.
Yeah, we're going to get to Cleveland. By the way, Cleveland, one of the real surprises in the power rankings. Before Marcus throws up the board here, just want to say that we did this together. Since our last one of the year, we just kind of conferred it. To be honest, we didn't disagree much. Like on the picks where we disagree on half the games. We really were in lockstep on most of these. We had a couple of really surprising teams, but we're going to start at the bottom like we normally do. And I hate to tell you guys this, but there's not a lot of surprises here. Carolina 32nd. I think we pretty much had Carolina parked here almost the entire year. Washington at 31. This was really your telling me you thought they were even worse than New England. We just talked about Bill Belichick's situation at 30. Anything stick out among this three-pack of really bad football teams?
The only reason I put New England ahead of Washington is that I felt like at least New England's defense the second half of the year played really, really well. I mean, the game they played against Kansas City a couple weeks ago, they were awesome. They played really well against Pittsburgh. They played well against the Jets.
They lost 6-0 to the Chargers.
I know. By the end of the year, that was with Justin Herbert, just to be clear.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, Washington wasn't doing anything well. They weren't blocking well. They weren't throwing the well. And, of course, that defense was the worst in the league. So I that's why I lean New England.
And Washington was not playing well on defense when the Cowboys had their starters in up 35-10 midway through the fourth quarter.
Oh, got a field goal out of it, though.
By the way, really tough to evaluate your quarterback when you don't have a good offensive line. I really hope Carolina this offseason – whether it's the draft, free agency, whatever they need to do, Marcus, they need more depth on that line. Bryce Young was, you know, it's really easy to pick on the guy, but he did not have the same situation as some of the other young quarterbacks in the league. No. I hope they do that. Number 29, the Los Angeles Chargers, 28, the Jets. These teams played a couple weeks ago. The Chargers were more disappointing in my book because the Jets had the major injury right off the top. I'm not saying the Chargers went through the season scot-free, but I just think they were more disappointing.
Yeah, and that roster was old to begin with. I didn't like the way it was constructed. It was just a bad year for the Chargers. They had opportunities to win some of these close games early in the year, and typical Chargers fashion, they just kept falling short. So super disappointing year that resulted in their coach getting fired.
Obviously, the Jets are going to try to run it back. Gosh, I really wanted to make a late night joke here, but I'm not going to do it. So let's talk about the Titans and Falcons. I got the Titans at 27, the Falcons at 26. Where do these teams go from here? Arthur Smith, former Titans assistant, let go by Atlanta right away. And the Titans firing Mike Vrabel. Where do these two teams go?
I think these two teams are both in the quarterback market. I think Will Levis at least gives you a little bit of hope. But I mean, the Falcons obviously are. We'll see about the Titans, especially if they get a new head. They're going to get a new head coach in here. It's a tough spot to be for those two teams right now.
Yeah, I think with the Falcons personnel, you're probably going to see some of the same MO, at least offensively. The Titans, with Derrick Henry leaving town, you could see a completely different offense. Mm-hmm. See what they do in the free agent market. Have to look at the wide receiver market out there. You know, if Hopkins doesn't come back to Tennessee, we'll see there. Last team on this board, the New York Giants at 25. I said I thought they, you know, based on preseason, maybe the most disappointing team, but they did play some good football the last 4 or 5 weeks at least.
I think of all these teams on this list, this is the one that I think that the future I would be the most concerned about. They just paid Daniel Jones a lot of money. The defense isn't very good. The offensive line is a major issue. They don't have a number one receiver, and they just let go of their defensive coordinator. On top of that, they're playing in a division with two 11-plus win teams this year. It's tough. Tough for the Giants.
I think one of the problems for the Giants is positional value. Their three best players are left tackle, defensive tackle, and running back.
And running back is not a free agent.
Yeah, and that's not horrible, especially in but left tackle, I don't think, is the quite as important as it was, say, 15, 20 years ago in kind of the Walter Jones heyday. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle, their defensive tackle is phenomenal. Tackle end guy moves around, but either way, I just don't. Those just aren't the positions, right? That you really you want your three major positions to be quarterback, right? Pass rusher. I'd even vote for a dynamite kicker here. But
agreed.
That's just not the Giants. So I don't know what's going to happen with them. Obviously, they're in a tough division with Philadelphia and Dallas. Okay, 24. We got the Broncos. That was Marcus's cue to. Can we really not talk about the Giants?
It's just good. We're good.
I thought this was a really interesting part of our rankings today. So 22, 23, and 24. The Broncos at 24, Cardinals at 23, Bears at 22. This may seem really high up for a Cardinal team that didn't win very many games. And I know Broncos fans who think, hey, we were in the playoff race to the very end. Are the Cardinals and Bears really better than the Broncos?
I mean, I think if the Broncos and Cardinals played right now, the Cardinals would be favorites on a neutral field. I got to say, I kind of think the Cardinals had like the perfect season in a lot of ways, considering the expectations, right? A lot of people thought they were going to be the worst team in the league. They weren't, but they also weren't so bad where they're outside of the top, 10 picks. They've got the number 4 pick. Kyler Murray came back and is healthy and played really well down the stretch. And I kind of think they got a good coach in Jonathan Gannon. Like, they played really hard for him over the final 4 or 5 weeks of the season. In some ways, I know it's hard to call a 4-13 season a successful one, but I kind of think it is.
I think what you meant is they weren't too good to work themselves out of the top 10, right?
Yes.
Right. I'm following you. So to be competitive, and they played really hard early in the year when they were losing some games. They snuck a win against Dallas. It wasn't sneaky. I mean, they earned the win.
They beat Dallas. They flat out beat Dallas.
And they flat out beat Philadelphia late in the year. But you're right. You got competitive play with a rookie head coach, yet they only won 4 games, so they're still in the top 5, and they can do some things that pick. Oh, by the way, Chicago, Matt Eberflus had the team playing a lot better late in the year, but I really think this was all about Justin Fields. I think if you're a Bears fan, you can look forward to the fact that you may have your quarterback. I say may because things with the Bears at quarterback, when Sid Luckman, who played literally in the 40s, still has some of your efficiency records, that speaks for itself. Yeah. But I think the Bears have got something going. They like the Giants, they played well late in the year. Our lowest ranked team with a winning record, the Jacksonville Jaguars at 21. We've got them underneath the Raiders at 20. We've got them underneath the Vikings at 19, both of whom had losing records. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, they just did not play well over the last 2 months. In the final game of the year, all they had to do was beat the Titans, who looked like they gave up the previous week, to win their division and host a home playoff game. And in the first half, like, there's guys on defense that just did not care to tackle, like, at all. Like, the effort level just was not there. I'm fine if, like, you have some execution stuff, but guys were flat out making business decisions on tackling. This Jacksonville team just fired the defensive coordinator. They fired a lot of their coaching staff on offense. I think there's got to be some real soul searching here.
Oh, man, their defense struggled so bad. They struggled against Cleveland. They had that terrible game against the Bengals on primetime. That's not really surprising. The Raiders were surprising. I think under Antonio Pierce, they played really competitive football. You mentioned to me today that their defense ended up 10th in points allowed. That's impressive.
Ninth, actually. Ninth. And if you remove touchdowns that the offense gave up, like pick sixes and fumbles and all that stuff, they were like 18.5 points per game allowed, which is incredible considering their offense was the least explosive offense in the NFL. They had a rookie quarterback, and they just could not sustain drives at all on that side of the ball.
And their running game wasn't as effective as it was last year. Nope. So it wasn't like they were burning a bunch of clock, chewing it up so that the defense could rest. That's not the way it worked. By the way, Minnesota, 7-10 here. I've got them at 19. We've got them at 19. I think actually a pretty good coaching job by Kevin O'Connell. I'm serious. I don't have any problem with this. I mean, it looked like their season was lost. Yeah, they had a lot of losses at the end of the year, but against Detroit, they were really competitive till the end of that game.
Considering that they lost Justin Jefferson for more than half of the season, they lost Kirk Cousins for more than half of the season, TJ Hawkinson got banged up, their offensive line was a disaster for most of the year. They were in the playoff hunt up until the final week of the season. I think if you're a Vikings fan, this year sucked, but you feel really good about your coaching staff and where that offense could potentially be next year.
I was watching the end of that Lions game, and the Lions ended up going up 30-20 and kind of putting the game away. And they showed Nick Mullins' stats, and he had like 396. I was like, Nick Mullins, I don't know why I get Nick Mullins and CJ Beathard always mixed up.
Two former 49er quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think at the same time, I think that's probably why I do. Last two teams on this list right here, Seattle at 18, Cincinnati at 17. They played early in the year at Cincinnati. Seattle beat them, I believe, in that game. But I think the Bengals were a better football team down the stretch than Seattle was. They were doing it with a backup quarterback. And boy, there's some games I think the Seahawks would really like to have back because they would be in the playoffs.
Yeah, but congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks. You went 9-8. You had a winning record. Smoke your cigars. It's awesome.
By the way, dumb, obvious comment of the year. Me saying, I think there's some games they'd like to have back because they missed the playoffs.
By one game.
Yeah.
How about the game against Pittsburgh?
Whoever tackles the most is going to win.
Yeah, whoever puts up the most points. Hey, remember that game against Pittsburgh in week 17 where they allowed like 300 rushing yards?
That's
probably when they want back.
Yeah, you think? Cincinnati, Jake Browning, what are you thinking going into next year?
I know you're joking, but I actually think they've got to feel really good about the backup quarterback situation going into next year. I mean, that was with Joe Burrow, who's proven not to be the most durable quarterback. I think they feel like now, hey, if Burrow needs to miss three games because of an ankle sprain, we'll be okay. This team going 9-8, considering where Joe Burrow was at the beginning of the year with his calf, Ja'Marr Chase missing time, T. Higgins basically missing half the season, and then obviously Burrow getting hurt again. Going 9-8 is pretty respectable.
You think does Atlanta make a trade offer?
No, because if you're Atlanta, what's Jake Browning doing for you?
Well, here's the funny thing. It's easy to say that now, but about 20 years ago in the NFL, if a guy played like Browning did, teams would be all over getting him. This is how Matt Schaub got on with Houston.
I was going to say Matt Flynn.
Matt Flynn. Yes. You remember these days when the ultimate example is Rob Johnson, had like one good game for the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Bills gave him a ton of money. That used to happen. That never happens anymore. Nobody looks at anyone's backup quarterback and says, we're going to pay them a lot of money, because I think people have caught on that doesn't work. By the way, Matt Flynn went into camp as a starter in Seattle and got beat out by a rookie, Russell Wilson. Let's go to the next board. Got some playoff teams on here. Okay, so at number 16, we'll just start right here with just the Steelers by themselves. This is my lowest ranked playoff team. I feel really stupid asking you if I'm being unfair. So can you make a case for the Steelers being higher than they are here?
Yeah, I mean, with Mason Rudolph, actually, let's do it this way. If you remove the games which Mitch Trubisky played this year, they were like 10-5 on the season. It's pretty impressive, actually. The defense finished inside the top 10. I think the most encouraging thing if you're a Steelers fan going into the playoffs is this running game is like back on track. They can really run the ball with Jalen Warren, Najee Harris, and they're going to be playing some bad weather games in the playoffs. We'll see.
I really thought the game was up, man, for them after they played the way they did against the Colts. On a Saturday a few weeks ago? Yeah, it wasn't looking good. Ditto for the Saints, man. I think a lot of people counted the Saints out. They thought it was going to be between the Falcons and Tampa for a while. Excuse me. But the Saints and Tampa ended up fighting for the division. Tampa got it on a tiebreaker. I think the Bucs are better, but who knows? In terms of next year, which one of these teams' outlooks do you like more? Because I think the quarterback position on both of these teams is interesting.
Oh, the Bucs. I like the Bucs so much more than I like the Saints. The Saints are, I believe, the last time I looked at the number, $88 million over the cap.
Yeah.
With a really old roster, with guys like DeMario Davis getting older, Cam Jordan, Michael Thomas, who never plays anymore. Ryan Ramczyk said he's going to retire after the year. At least the Bucks are playing well, and they've got a lot of money they can spend this year.
I don't know, but the Saints, they really ruined their season next year because they upset Arthur Smith in the last game of the year. I don't know if you saw that. They scored a touchdown.
Poor yeah. Arthur Smith.
Man, I love that Jameis Winston called that play in the huddle. If you guys don't know, Dennis Allen and the Saints wanted to call a victory formation, kneel on the ball, and Jameis Winston overruled the play call in the huddle and handed it off to his running back because he hadn't scored a touchdown all year. That's pretty awesome.
By the way, that's going to earn Jameis Winston a lot of brownie points around the league. Just let you know.
How many touchdowns did Jamal Williams score last year?
Was it 19?
He had none this year.
Yeah.
Crazy. Colts at 13. We talked about them already. I think overall successful year, as Marcus mentioned, they have a lot to look forward to next year. They've got their sophomore quarterback coming back. Nice year from their rookie head coach. I like the Colts. I don't like our 12th ranked team. And a lot of people are going to be shocked that they're this low, but the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't think this is too low a ranking considering how bad they've been playing. I don't care what their record is.
I don't want to turn this into a Cowboys podcast, but like 2 months ago, I asked you who was the better quarterback between Jalen Hurts and Dak. And I said Dak, and you thought that was ridiculous. How do you feel now going into the playoffs?
I didn't think it was ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous how easily you answered that, like there's no competition. I still would like to see Jalen Hurts with a healthy knee. You know, I think that's throwing him off this year, but we'll see. You may end up being right. So either way, Dak clearly outplayed him over the stretch, but it wasn't just Dak. It's not just Dak.
No.
It's the whole doggone team, man.
Do you know what's really funny, though? Do you know what Jalen Hurts' passing numbers were this year without looking?
No.
23 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Happens to be the exact same number that Dak had last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and you made all these excuses for Dak last year. Which, and now you don't make any of them. And Hurts is legitimately injured, whereas Dak wasn't injured last year except for the games that he missed.
Well, he had the bad pinky. I will say a lot of Jalen Hurts' interceptions came on like Hail Marys and end of the game stuff. So I'm not. I think the narrative around Dak's last year, his interceptions were stupid. I hope that doesn't happen to Jalen Hurts because I actually like Jalen Hurts quite a bit.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts. I think he's going to rebound. We'll see. He seems to have that kind of character. Will. I'll tell you a guy that really rebounded this year in the middle of the year, talked about him, Jordan Love. I mean, my gosh, Jordan Love finished with 34 touchdowns passing. He also ran for like 300 and something yards. You know, look, am I saying the Packers are going to beat the Cowboys? I'm not, but I think Jordan Love can give a lot of teams difficulty, including the one they're going to be playing this weekend.
I'm not scared of Jordan Love at all. Terrified.
Yeah.
I watched that whole Chicago game on Sunday because I was actively rooting for the Bears because I didn't really want to play Jordan Love in the first round. He was amazing. I mean, the some of the throws he made in that game were incredible. He is already one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. I've got no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with their defense. Their defense has been viable this year. I'm kind of with you. We'll talk about it more in the Picks podcast. Aaron Jones, who maybe didn't have a big year. He missed a lot of time, but we'll see how he does this weekend because I think he's a big factor. Two more teams to get to here. Houston Texans, who we talked about a lot in the preamble to the show. Obviously a great year. I think we should mention DeMeco Ryans as a top coach of the year candidate. I'm still kind of going Stefanski on this one for Cleveland. Are you leaning Ryan's here, or what are you thinking?
No, I'm going Stefanski. What that team did with all the injuries, not you mentioned the quarterback and the running back, but they lost four offensive tackles. You know how hard it is to play without your starting two offensive tackles? Yeah. To lose four and then get decimated on injury with a defense with injuries. Kevin Stefanski had this team at 11-5 where they could rest guys in week 18. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, because anytime the Cowboys backup tackle has to play, you hear whining all over the place. That's why I have Byron Bell still stuck in my head. Yeah, how about losing four? Sorry for the... by the way, I should mention in the coach of the year kind of race, DeMeco Ryans, Kevin Stefanski, why can't Sean McVay be part of that? I know this wasn't a Super Bowl year for him. He's been to two Super Bowls, but did he coach better in 2018 and better in 2021 than he did this year?
I hope Sean McVay doesn't get this award because this has been an award where you get coach of the year and then you get fired like 2 years later. So for Sean McVay's sake, I hope that doesn't happen.
I just hope, you know, now that he's having to work, you know, extra weeks, that means his white sneakers have probably gotten a little bit dirtier. He hasn't been able to replace them. You know, I don't know. I don't know if you've been paying attention. Like that guy, like there's not a week that goes by that he's not perfectly dressed. Like he has the tight hoodie shirt on, you know what I mean? With the perfect fitting khakis and the white sneakers. And like literally the hair is always on point. We haven't done a Banana Republic stock report look in a while.
Up 38% since the season started. I think it's just those West Coast teams. Like you get Shanahan, McVay, and Gannon, and Pete Carroll, all well dressed guys. But you go to certain other divisions like the NFC East, and it's not necessarily the same.
Yeah. No, it's not. Let's go to the top eight. Well, it is in Dallas. I mean, I think McCarthy is. Where does McCarthy shop?
The big and tall.
You never saw Ronnie Dangerfield back to school, did you?
No.
No, come on. You don't remember his stores, tall and fat stores?
Oh, come on. Mike McCarthy said he lost
40 pounds. I didn't say Mike McCarthy is tall. I didn't say he was tall and fat. I'm just talking about Ronnie Dangerfield's stores. Oh. Jeez Louise, come on. Why are you trying to make me look bad? I'm just talking about a movie. I wasn't talking about Mike McCarthy, sure. Man.
I like Mike McCarthy. He's doing a great job. Three straight 12-win seasons for the Cowboys. Really well.
Yeah, done. And he celebrated by taking a group picture with his quarterbacks and some of his staff on the 40-yard line on Washington's field.
That's not my favorite Mike McCarthy. Hold on. We need to pause for a second. Yeah. I want to tell you about my favorite Mike McCarthy moment from this season. Yeah. The Cowboys are playing in Buffalo, which I don't know. You're a former Texan. Do you guys, is there Tim Hortons in Texan or in Dallas?
In Texan?
In Texas. Is there Tim Hortons in Dallas?
I don't remember. That sounds more like a steakhouse.
Okay. No, Tim Hortons is a coffee shop that's popular in Buffalo and Canada. And in the Buffalo Cowboy game, he was on the sideline in the third quarter when the Cowboys were getting blown out, drinking his hot chocolate, which I have to say the Tim Hortons hot chocolate is amazing. So kudos to Mike McCarthy for getting this hot chocolate on Buffalo.
Well, I just wanted to say, since you made me look bad, I was just saying that Back to School is an absolute classic. And if you haven't seen it, it has Uncle Pauly in it, Burt Young, and he's kind of like the bodyguard. I can't believe you haven't seen it just because Burt Young is in it.
Hey, speaking of well-dressed coaches, Mike McDaniel at number eight, the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, well, after wearing the Pierre Cardin $650 sunglasses against Baltimore and getting the doors blown off of them, Miami recovered by losing at home and blowing it in the fourth quarter to the Buffalo Bills, blowing the AFC East and blowing a home playoff game. So all the people who thought Mike McDaniel was literally the best coach in the league and all the Twitter nerds who constantly praise the guy.
Stop it. He's great. They've had so many injuries on both sides of the ball. Okay. I'm not crushing him. I am crushing the Capri. Look, I'm not a Capri fan.
I just wanted you to have to squirm a little bit. That
I'm not going to.
Do you feel the Dolphins have been a little disappointing down the stretch?
Absolutely not. No.
No, you're okay with them.
When you lose your top three edge players, you lose two linebackers, you lose your all-pro corner. They're down to their third center. They've had offensive line injuries all year. And then you play Buffalo without Jalen Waddle and Raheem Mostert. Like, that game was really competitive despite all of the injuries they had. I'm not going to kill them.
Yeah, and Buffalo hasn't lost anyone significant at all. Except for, like, the two best defensive players. Sorry. Look, I mean, I'm just hating on you a little bit. Kansas City at seven, by the way, everybody. Okay. I would say that Kansas City's offense was really disappointing, but we wondered aloud who is going to be catching balls besides Travis Kelce in that offense. It reared its ugly head over and over and over again. I can't remember the last time a really prominent team had one position group that was so bad like this. Can you remember a prominent team that had this big a problem in one area?
Well, there were a couple of those years where New England got really bad at receiver, like in Tom Brady's peak. I'm thinking like 2006, where I think they kind of squandered some Super Bowl years by having like David Patton as their number one receiver after they let Deion Branch go. Mm-hmm, That's a good question. I'm not sure.
There's been some teams that have had, you know, injury problems. There's been some teams that couldn't run the ball, but I probably the last prominent team that I remember having this obvious of a receiver issue were the Donovan McNabb Eagles pre-TO, when like James Thrash was literally their best wide receiver. They had Fred X Mitchell. They just had such problems getting the ball down the field. And you realize Donovan McNabb was really special, by the way, everybody early on in his career to make up for that.
Freddie Mitchell still had my favorite post-game interview of all time. I don't know if you remember this, but I think he was getting interviewed by Aaron Andrews. And he said, "I'd like to thank my hands for being so great." And it just made me laugh as a kid. I thought that was so funny.
Since Todd Haley is your neighbor, can you name me the former Eagles receiver that Todd Haley picked up to play late in the season in the playoffs? Guy had a mustache. This is tough. This is hard. Oh,
for which team?
For Kansas City. Todd Haley picked him up. They played Baltimore in the playoffs, but they got beat.
It wasn't bad. Eddie Kennison, was it?
No, it was Kevin Curtis.
Oh, yeah. White receiver, yeah. Number 83.
Yeah. There you go. All right, so this might be the surprising team on the power rankings. We almost put them up at 5. Cleveland Browns at 6. It'd be easy to say this is too high, but we easily put this team there. Cleveland's defense is so doggone good. They're getting competent quarterback play. They've been able to run the ball at least effectively enough with Nick Chubb. They have arguably the best defensive player in the league. And despite all their injuries, they managed to stay in games and then suffocate teams' offenses so they don't get too many possessions. I don't know what more you could say about this team that's not being said. I really, at this point, I think Cleveland has the best shot to beat Baltimore. I'm serious. I'm not saying Cleveland's the best team in the AFC. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. But if you give me the entire field in the AFC and you say, all right, who's going to knock off the Ravens? I think it's Cleveland.
And don't forget, they have Amari Cooper, who put up 1,250 yards in 15 games, playing with 4 different starting quarterbacks. And I also think that one of the biggest developments for this team, like in the second half of the year, is that David Njoku has just kind of like completely broken out. Mm-hmm. And now with Njoku in the middle of the field and Amari on the outside, like they have bona fide weapons that you have to be concerned about. This team absolutely could make a run and get to the Super Bowl. Absolutely.
Their offensive line coach deserves a ton of credit.
Bill Callahan.
Because there have been games that Joe Flacco has had plenty of time to throw, and you've mentioned all the injuries they've had on the offensive line. They've made some clutch kicks this year. They beat Pittsburgh at home in a game they had to have, and they were so impressive against San Francisco. I'm kind of gushing about this team, but I just really think they have the best shot to knock off the Ravens if they can get there. Of course, they got to play in Houston. Cleveland, the best AFC wildcard team. Let's talk Detroit here. I told you at the beginning of the year, if there was one thing I wanted from the season, it was for Detroit and Cleveland to be good. They both were. I guess my question to you is, how good is Detroit? They're 11-6. That was their record this year. Did they end up going 12-5? They went 12-5.
12-5.
Yeah. I think they're better than we thought they were a month ago. I do.
I think they're better than Detroit. Now, I know you put the Lions here at 5, which is fine. It's not a big deal, but I still worry about the Lions against some better opponents. We saw them get blown out by Baltimore. They lost to the Cowboys. They lost to Green Bay at home, where Cleveland has been in every game this year. Like, no matter who they play, they've been in every game. They beat the 49ers. They beat the Ravens. I just think that the Browns, I think, are a team that's better suited to match up against playoff teams than Detroit is.
Then why did you want me to put the Lions over them?
I did not think I wanted you to put the Browns over them.
I think you did too.
That's fine.
It's tough, hey, man.
You're one spot. It's not. I'm not. We're really picking nits here.
It's tough. Lions Rams, man. That is fun. We'll talk about that on the picks podcast. But I have much more confidence that Cleveland can knock off Baltimore than Detroit can knock off San Francisco. But a lot of that has to do with styles make fights. I don't think Detroit matches up well with San Francisco. I do think Cleveland matches up well with Baltimore. Let's go to number 4. I have the Bills over the Browns. I don't think the Bills would be able to beat Baltimore in Baltimore unless Josh Allen has one of these crazy games. And my brother mentioned this to me on the phone. He said, you know, Josh Allen's like rolling a 20-sided die. You don't know if you're going to get a 20 or a 1, and it could be anything in between with him. He's capable of beating anybody. I see your stupid mug. I'm sure you have a fat head of...
No, this is like my popcorn tip.
Or popcorn thing. Do you have a fat head of like Aaron Schobel?
No, what, I've got a fat head of CJ Spiller. I don't know what you're talking about. I like this Bills team a lot. I like the way that they were resilient in the second half of the year. I mean, now there a couple things just go differently. Like they don't have 12 guys on the field when the Broncos missed that kick. They beat Phil. Gabe Davis just looks the right way against the Eagles.
Not to mention the calls in that game.
Right. Two of those games go differently, and they're the one seed in the AFC. Having said all that, it just sucks that they're going to be one and done in the playoffs.
Josh Allen made the craziest play I've seen all season against Kansas City when he's getting pushed out of bounds and he flicks the ball kind of across his body, not looking to his tight end or whatever to convert the first down. It's absolutely insane. So of course, they beat Kansas City.
Apparently, you agree with me that Buffalo is going to be one and done.
I'm worried about it. You got me spooked on the stupid Steelers. All right. Yeah. Let's go to the Cowboys here at number three. Marcus and I did debate Buffalo and Dallas here because, quite frankly, Buffalo destroyed Dallas. There was nothing fluky about it. Nope. It was an awful game for the Cowboys, but it was an awful game for the Cowboys because Buffalo ran the ball well. And I just, on a neutral field consistently, I think Dallas probably wins 6 out of 10. Based on the way they've played the entire year. I say that sheepishly, though, because I would not want Dallas to go play in Buffalo right now.
It's all about the style. I do think the Cowboys probably are the better overall balanced team. They're really good on special teams. Dak is playing really well. The offensive line is healthy. They've got two really good pass rushers. But we'll see. We'll see what Dallas can do in the playoffs. We'll see if this team is built to play playoff football.
Want to just point out one thing. We've talked about this guy a few times. I know y'all talk about him on Locked On Cowboys, but where did you tell me that Tank Lawrence is ranked in edge defenders right now?
According to PFF, I believe it's number 5 this year.
He's got like 4 sacks. So if you look at all the other edge defenders, what are they sitting at? Like 17 and a half?
Yeah.
And it's just such a great thing that I'll give Marcus a lot of credit for. He talks about all the time that sacks are an overrated stat. And Tank is so hard to block. He every time he comes off the field, it seems like teams want to run at him. And I just think he's the one Cowboy that has been so underrated. That's why we talk about him all the time. Because if you think about the Cowboys that maybe will be all pros, first or second team, CD for sure, Tyron a good shot at second team, Brandon Aubrey a good shot at second team, Jerron Bland a good shot at second team. Obviously, Micah could be first or second team. Dak's got a very, very outside shot at second team. I don't think Tank Lawrence is going to get a vote, but he sure deserves one.
I don't disagree. One of the most underrated Cowboys of the last 20 years.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate. Like I said, or like you've said many times, sacks are just so, I mean, gosh, especially in the Hall of Fame voting, which we need to talk about at some point. It's just so overrated. They're one, I mean, a sack in the second quarter on first down does almost.
Well, really quickly, just one of the things they don't get are half sacks, right? Because you beating your guy and getting to the quarterback at the same time as somebody else who's beating the guy and getting to the quarterback, why should you only be rewarded with a half a sack when you did your job just as well as somebody who got a full sack on another play? It's never really made sense to me.
No, but you know, there's the plays like this week against the Commanders where Tank causes the interception.
Yeah.
And you know, what credit does he get for that? He's going to get a pressure, you know, but he caused a turnover and it was a big play in the game. And so just a note on that, speaking of defensive line, I've talked to you all year, or at least for the last 4 or 5 weeks, about the 49ers that they're at number 2. And then I felt like their defensive line has not really put together that game yet. I'm still waiting for that game. If it comes in the playoffs, who's the most capable of beating them? Who's the most capable of going into San Francisco in the NFC? We're not counting Baltimore and beating them if they're playing their top game.
Nobody. Nobody. I think they're the favorite still to win the Super Bowl. I would be shocked if they don't win the Super Bowl.
If we just had to pick one team, I'm thinking the Rams would have the best chance to actually beat them because they're division opponents. You're really having fun with your computer right now.
Yeah, we're good.
Am I wrong on that?
They're probably the best bet just because they're division games, right? And division games are a little bit weird. And you have to have a quarterback that's willing to stand in there and just deliver the ball knowing that you're going to get hit. So I do agree with you.
I mean, I think the Cowboys have a good quarterback. I think the Lions have a good quarterback. The Cowboys have not fared well against this team at all. I think the Lions are the 49ers are a terrible matchup for them. I just think the Rams, and I think the Rams would run Kyron Williams about 25 times to really try to slow those guys down. We'll talk more about the Rams this weekend. They're going to be playing at Detroit. But let's get to our number one team. It's the Baltimore Ravens. I assume there's really no argument against this team. Are the Ravens, in your mind, the favorites to win the Super Bowl?
No, I think it's the 49ers. I think what's interesting about the Ravens is they're clearly the best team in the AFC. But the way the bracket sets up, Elliot, is they are very likely to play an AFC North team in round two of the playoffs. And those are just weird games. Like, they lost to Pittsburgh in both games this year. Mm-hmm. They lost to Cleveland in Baltimore this year.
Yep.
If you're the Ravens, like, you would love for Miami to be coming to play you, or Houston to go play you, or even Buffalo, as we mentioned. But seeing Cleveland or Pittsburgh has to be a little terrifying.
Yeah, I do think we have to be a little careful when we not disparage Kansas City, but I don't think anybody wants to see Patrick Mahomes play them. I still think there's a mystique about that guy.
But I'm telling you, if I would almost be willing to bet if it's Baltimore or if it's Kansas City coming to Baltimore or Cleveland coming to Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the team that can't throw the ball right now.
Right, and you know, we should say, is Joe Flacco, you know, going up against his old team in a stadium he knows real well and a defense that's going to give Flacco plenty of opportunities because Baltimore will be punting.
Or I'm telling you, the Steelers match up incredibly well against the Ravens. Lamar Jackson has beaten them once in his career. They play Lamar Jackson better than any other team in the league. Pittsburgh, a team that's not afraid to go to Baltimore and beat them. It's weird. I still anticipate the Ravens coming out of the AFC, but it's not going to be as easy as it usually is for a number one seed.
Last thing for you here. Somebody that might be pulling for the Niners or don't really want the Ravens to win the Super Bowl or think that the Ravens really aren't that good, make the case for how the 49ers could beat them, because the Ravens beat them handily a few weeks ago.
Oh, I just think Brock Purdy plays a little bit better of a game. Maybe he will after some more playoff experience, and maybe, you know, I'm sure Kyle Shanahan's going to come up with, you know, answers on that side of the ball, but the 49ers just had a bad game. It happens. I don't expect them to play that poorly the next time around.
I don't either. That game was sure surprising, though. I'll say that. So just to review our top eight here, Miami at 8, Kansas City at 7, the surprising Cleveland Browns at 6. Marcus actually thinks that they should probably be at 5, where I have the Detroit Lions. Really arguable between Buffalo and Dallas at 4 and 3. Mm-hmm. It's 3A and 3B, but we got the Bills at 4. We got the Cowboys at 3, 49ers at 2, Baltimore at 1. Your final thoughts, sir?
I'm really excited to see the NFC playoffs. I think we've got some awesome matchups in the NFC between Cowboys and Packers. That's just a really good historic matchup. The quarterback play is going to be outstanding in that one. We get Stafford going back home against the quarterback that he's played against before. I can't wait to see what McVay does against Jared Goff, somebody he's worked with for years. I'm sure he's going to know every little trick to bother Jared Goff. And then Tampa Bay, Philadelphia. Like, what happens if Philadelphia goes on the road and loses to Tampa Bay? What's the ramifications of that? I think the NFC playoffs are going to be amazing.
Or vice versa. What if Philadelphia goes and puts it all together and wins 38-10? And you're like, wait a minute, where did this come from? Where's this been all year? I think that's the most intriguing game. And that's the one I'm most curious about, I guess you could say. In terms of enjoyment, it's hard to beat Rams Detroit. I mean, I think that game is going to be exciting. There's a lot of juice to that game. The game that I'm also really, really curious about is Cleveland at Houston.
Yeah.
I want to see that defense go up against CJ Stroud, how he adjusts, how for real are the Texans? And of course, we talked about how cool it would be if the Browns advanced because of their ability to maybe knock off the Ravens. But that's it for us. Those are our final end of season power rankings. We'll do some picks later this week. Always remember, though, you can get some good Cowboys prognostication at Locked On Cowboys. Marcus does that with Landon McCool. They're always on the bright side with the Cowboys. Marcus also covers the Raiders for USA Today Raiders Wire, and he writes for the 33rd team. Don't forget his Dynasty podcast on the Locked On Network as well. He is at Marcus_Mosher on Twitter, and we will talk to you guys later this week. Take care, everybody.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.